You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. And as I say, always great to be with you and with our listeners out there. And as you know, I never know where or what out there is.
We call them cyberland.
Okay, I'll go along with it.
Everywhere around the world and into outer space. Because, you know, most communication, people think like domestic phone lines, whatever, on wires or fiber optic. No, it goes by microwave. So I tell every broadcaster, you know, you're immortal. Your voice has continued to travel through the universe at the speed of light.
That is too profound to contemplate.
Now, my question to you, Bob, today is what's better for your long-term economic health, home ownership or renting and investing?
Well, over all of the decades, the best thing has been to buy the home, pay the mortgage, and then after 20 or 25 years, you retire the mortgage and you own the home. It's a good deal.
And if you pay the mortgage every week, you can retire that mortgage in 15 years, not 25. And people say, oh, I can't afford to pay every week. It's the same amount a month, but the faster you pay off the capital part of it.
Oh, right. Yeah, you get numbers going for you then. Mm-hmm.
I did that with my mortgage. I paid every 2 weeks, and in 17 years, your mortgage is done.
Yeah.
Plus, couldn't you consider a mortgage an enforced savings plan?
Oh, yeah. That's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, the reason I'm in favor of home ownership, when was the last time you got, even if the price of your home goes down and say, oh, I didn't make much of a profit or I didn't make any profit, I only got, you know, $500,000 back. When was the last time you got any money back when you rented and left that particular suite?
Oh, right. Yeah, let's move on, Jim.
Well, we'll take a look at, here's something that caught my eye. In Canada right now, more businesses are closing than opening.
Oh, yeah. This is the Trudeau and Carney anti-freedom, anti-business, anti-prosperity program. And actually, Carney is a climate zealot. He really is fearful of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Does he think that the carbon molecule up there has a shiny side and it faces down and reflects all the energy back to Earth? I mean, it is, no. A little photon of energy hits the carbon dioxide molecule, gives a little wiggle, and then that energy lift is lost and it continues on. So, no. Carbon dioxide has nothing to do with temperatures during the day, the week, the month, or the millennia. It's a crazy promotion.
Manitoba Premier Wab Kanew believes that within 4 years they'll be shipping LNG out of the port of Churchill.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be good. Yeah, and it'd be actually good to use that port. Now, it won't be the year-round shipping there because the northern reaches of Hudson's Bay can get a lot of ice. So, but no, it would be outstanding to get that going.
Plus, if you assign icebreakers to the route, perhaps you could keep it open an extra month or two in either side of the ice season.
Give yourself a little room. But listen, I ran into kind of a quote here that I liked. And this dates from 1560.
Wow.
In England. Quote, "This dunghill trade of brokery, newly sprung up and coined in the devil's mining house, minting house, the shop of all mischief, hath made many a thief more than ever would have been imagined." So they called the brokerage business a dunghill trade. And then let me get the page over here. Oh, yeah. And some political definitions here. Compassion. The use of tax money to buy votes. Insensitivity. Objection to the use of tax money to buy votes. Then there's the special interest lobby, politically organized conservatives. Then there is the public interest lobby, politically organized liberals. So four little amusements there.
I could see where you could make money on that dunghill. You can burn it for fuel, or you can use it to fertilize your fields and grow more productive crops.
Yeah.
So dung's not necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, no. It can be used. And I remember stories about my very ancient grandfather in southern Saskatchewan when he homesteaded there. And then there'd always be a heaped up pile of manure. And he had a car that was so early that it didn't have electric starter. It had a hand crank. So through the fall season, he would park the car on top of the manure heap, and it would keep it warmer.
Oh, yes, the fermentation.
Yeah.
Well, I know all about, maybe I'm still shoveling it, Bob, but I grew up on a homestead, and you do shovel a lot of that stuff.
A lot of shoveling that, can't say that word.
Well, on the internet you can, we just don't because we're polite.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I said, somebody said, well, you've been on the radio your whole life. You never did stop shoveling it. We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. First headline from Breitbart. Venezuela passes new mining law to attract U.S. and foreign investment.
There you are. Venezuela, which was run by the dictator Maduro, and it was a drug-corrupt country, and Trump got rid of Maduro and put him in jail. And then now the locals there are trying to make it more prosperous, and they passed a new mining law to attract foreign investment. How practical. Whereas in Canada, under Trudeau and Carney, they purposely moved to make do any kind of business venture in Canada hopeless. And then I remember a little while ago I saw Carney talking about it, and they were going to, his idea of exporting power to the States was to set up solar cells and windmills, say on the border of Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and sell it south. Well, the U.S. Midwest on through there to the Gulf gets huge winds, and the further south you get, the better the sunshine. So Carney and Trudeau, they just are in some sort of strange la-la land.
From Bloomberg, pawn shop loans spike as high gas prices weigh on Americans.
Oh, yeah. This one is a sad one, where people having to take valuables and upon them to get enough to pay for the higher gas. Because when you're, you know, even though you're in a modest budget, a lot of people are driving. And the bump up in gas prices was pretty huge. So, yeah.
Yes, and in most of the U.S., public transit is not an option.
Right. Yeah.
Now, Fetterman says American media carrying water for Iran.
Oh, yeah. Fetterman is a very colorful Democrat. And what he says is that he thinks he's still a Democrat, but the rest of the Democrats have all turned horribly left, and they are no longer Democrats. But anyways, Fetterman makes a good point here that the American media is more concerned about Iran failing than in having Trump end the atrocities in Iran, where religious fanatics are murdering their own people. And the American media are supporting Iran over Trump's effort to bring Iran down. It is amazing.
From the Financial Post, 61% of Canadians feeling financial whiplash due to persistent economic uncertainty.
Yeah, they're using the term whiplash. And, boy, that, and it is valid. These hits, ups and downs have been horrendous, shocking. And if you're on a tight budget, and as we said just the line above, you're driving to work, you got to drive to work, and you're going to be paying a lot more for gasoline. So, and then, of course, in Canada, you got Trudeau and Carney trying to make gasoline prices as high as possible so that people stop driving gasoline cars. Hmm. Oh, we'll add one more, Jim. They want everybody to drive electric vehicles. But they don't understand that even a target by 2030, I forget how many, what percentage are supposed to be electric vehicles, they'd have to build 10 nuclear power plants to provide the additional demands for electricity. But do you ever see them talk about that? Oh, no. It is forcing people to do something and then never thinking about the costs. I mean, what would the cost be and the time to build 10 nuclear electrical generating reactors? They're totally insane.
Bob, would it be practical to pass a law saying every new building has to have solar panels on it?
I go down to St. Paul's Hospital on a regular schedule thing, and I look out the roof, and they got some solar panels there. They look like they've been there for about 20 years. And I thought, gee, I should phone the public relations department at the hospital and say, how are you doing with your solar panels? You get one hailstorm, Jim, and the solar panels are finished. And then they get dusty, and they're not that efficient anyways, but hey,
you got to put windshield wipers on them.
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny? Yeah.
Well, here's another thing that I noticed, headline about Canada perhaps joining the EU because of the trades and tariff problems with the U.S. This is a Nanos and Spark advocacy poll conducted in April 2026. It found that roughly 57 to 58% of Canadians are open to exploring or supporting full membership with the EU, with 25% in favor of doing that. Is that practical?
No. It is pure Trump derangement syndrome. Now, in you know, our politics in Canada are controlled by the Denisons who live in downtown Toronto, downtown Montreal, and downtown Ottawa, and they always have enough votes to overwhelm the West. So, no, the Ottawa is out to destroy, or has been for a decade, destroying the Canadian economy because they have this superstition about carbon dioxide. It is a form of madness.
And, Bob, before we go here, I'd like to discuss the everything bubble. I know we've talked about it before, but can you maybe discuss it a little bit? Like, what is it, and have we seen giant bubbles like this before?
Oh, yeah. This is we can call it a great financial bubble, and this one is including everything, so I've been calling it the everything bubble. And it is number six. And the first one was the South Sea bubble that erupted and blew out in June of 1720. And that one was invented just right then and there. And because nothing like it had happened before, because a number of stocks trading in London, there was not enough to call it a market until about 1692, they began to have enough stocks trading, and in 1694, the Bank of England was the first central bank, and so the modern world of finance was fully in play by the end of the 1600s, and then, woo-wee, you had the South Sea bubble, and that was then newly invented. But then you had the...
Bob, can I ask a question? Why was it called the South Sea Bubble?
Oh, there was a stock called the South Sea Company, and it was going to make huge monies in Panama or something like that.
Oh, I see, yes.
Yeah, so anyways, the next great bubble was 1772, and then there was 1825, and then there was 1873 was a great, great bubble. And then 1929 and all of that entails. And then now we have number six. And there you can define it down to about four different things that do the same thing on each bubble. And, of course, stocks go crazy. But it seems like after the bubble is over, the senior currency becomes chronically firm. And today, the senior currency is the U.S. dollar. This BRICS thing is being promoted by people who haven't got a clue. China is a communist country, so there's no way that their currency is going to be there. So it's market forces that decide what is the senior currency. And then what makes it chronically firm in the post-bubble depression is that on the mania for debt, a whole lot of the debt was done in the financial center, New York City, and all of that money is due and payable in U.S. dollars into New York. So that means all of the countries and all of the big wheeler dealers that owe U.S. dollars, they have to sell something to get their hands on a dollar to meet their obligations in New York. And that's the way it works. And then even way back in 1551, Thomas Gresham was one of the great traders in history, and at that time Antwerp was the money market, was also the commercial center of the world, and he was the agent for the Elizabeth I, the crown in the money market, and what has since been called Gresham's Law, that bad money drives out good money, was essentially in his letters of common sense about financial markets. So, and one of the advice was that don't try and service debt from a weak currency into a firm senior currency. It is an uphill, hellish battle. And this is why, well, for example, I always cite Argentina as complaining about the firm U.S. dollar. And Argentina's problem is they owe a whole lot of dollars into New York. So they're going to complain about it. And it is not yet grinding. And then the other one, Jim, that happens is real long interest rates. It's where you take the rate, long-dated treasuries and adjust it for the CPI inflation, and you get real long rates. And we're now up about 2.5 points with real rates going up, and some people are finding it uncomfortable. But hey, the typical increase has been in the order of 10 percentage points. It's Mother Nature's way of unwinding the idiocy of a great financial mania. And, real rates going up like that is in the past has been a horror show.
Bob, are we in the last moments of our bubble of everything, or is there still room for the stock market to continue to grow?
Well, you've got two things going on out here. You have the culmination of a great financial bubble, and I believe that is happening. Then you get the whipsaw news of bad hit to the stock market because crude oil jumped up in price. And then you get good news for the stock market when crude oil sells off. So there's a lot of, hey, let's use the term whipsawing motions out there. So we'll just watch and see how the next few months go. I doubt that they could resume the bull market. It's highly doubtful. And then at some point, it'll roll over in the stock market. Now, in ordinary business cycle, you know, the 3 to 4 year one, the stock market at highs tends to lead the economy. So this is where the Standard & Poor's 500 is in the official's leading index of leading indicators. But they don't know that when you're in a financial bubble, the stock market doesn't lead. It turns down almost instantly with the stock market. Like in New York, the 1929 bubble peaked in that September. That's well known. And the economy peaked in as determined by the National Bureau of Economic Research, it peaked in August. And then in 1873, that great bubble, the New York stock market peaked in September, and the economy then peaked in that October. So essentially, you have the peak in the stock market. It fails, and it sucks the economy down almost right away. So this is probable.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you and with our listeners.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.